Good evening, everybody. This is Seed Roverdale, guest hosting the Naturalist Capitalist podcast. Very excited to be on the show this evening, representing libertarianism and all that it means to fight for liberty and why. And as a first guest on the Seed Roverdale Naturalist Capitalist, we'll be having Reed Coverdale. What's up, man?
I know he probably fooled all you guys, but that's actually Chase Geyser there.
I was telling Reed right before we hopped on that for $35 you can be a duplicate. So maybe the Libertarian Party in a couple of years will just kind of have like the burgundy t-shirt uniform with the overalls, you know, and the walrus mustache.
Yeah. I mean, is mine a walrus mustache or is it a little more prestigious than that?
Yours is a little bit more refined, but the closest thing I could find on Amazon was the walrus one.
Is that what you looked up, just walrus mustache, or what did you type in?
I think I did look it up, and I probably should have cut it. You're right, because yours doesn't go down below like the lip line.
It did last year. I did the strong handlebars all the way down to the edge of the chin. It was kind of cringy, but...
Yeah, no, that's not cringy, man. I play a lot of Red Dead Redemption, so that's kind of right up my alley.
So why don't you tell us about your actual show that you have? What's your real show called?
Sure. So I have a podcast called One American Podcast. It's American with an N on the end, not to be confused with like One American News Network or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I basically started it because I kind of got pissed off at my own party, which was the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I still vote for Republicans, but I don't really consider myself a Republican anymore because they suck. And so I thought, you know, like, man, like, I wish that when people asked me what political party I was affiliated with, I didn't have to say I'm a Republican. Like, if someone asked me, are you a Republican or a Democrat, I just wanted to be able to say I am One American. And so that's how, like, the whole thing kind of blew, like, the whole brand vision, like, One American Podcast, and, you know, maybe one day it'll be One American Party, like, for a political party or whatever. I can just kind of branch it out and brand it. And I don't mean to use the term brand it in terms of, like, because the connotation is that I'm trying to make money, and don't get me wrong, I'd be happy to make money off of it, but I'm mostly doing the podcast just so I can hang out with cool people like you. And so,
I was gonna say, sorry you had to hang out with me as one of them, but you know,
no,
yeah,
man, you're awesome.
Some cool people eventually, but
oh man, you're awesome.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Absolutely, I love that episode you guys did last night with Dawson and
I didn't
know who he was till last night.
You didn't know Ryan Dawson till last night?
No, man, the censorship must have worked on me.
Yeah, man, that's buckle in.
Yeah. Well, I had heard of the 9/11 documentary that he made. I just didn't like put it together that was him, and I've never seen it. I still haven't seen it, so I need to watch it. But it's like 3 hours of him talking into like a 360 webcam. I'm like, oh god, like I know it's good. So I think I just need to buckle down and do it.
I think it's 5 hours actually. It's long. I've seen it once, and you can't remember. I mean, maybe I don't know what type of brain you have, but I can't remember all of it watching it the first time. I'd have to watch it like five or six times in a row to really remember all that information. But he's quite the unit. Tell us a little bit about your history. Like, were you always a Republican before, or what do you do for work? Like, just give us a little backstory on your life.
So I grew up in the armpit of the universe, which is Bloomington, Illinois. I went to a small town high school. There were 80 kids in my graduating class, and I thought I wanted to be a music producer. I spent a lot of time making music in high school. I went to college in Nashville, Tennessee, and got a degree in audio engineering with a minor in philosophy. But the political thing was always just sort of like an interest from like a philosophy and sort of hobby perspective, right? You know, and so it started for me really when my dad was a small business owner, so I always kind of had a conservative bend. But it started for me when I read The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand when I was 17. That really set me on a path of, hey, we need to start thinking in terms of individuals, not in terms of groups or identity politics. If there are no individual rights, then there are no minority rights, because the individual is the greatest minority, right?
Right.
And so that sort of set me on like a conservative path. And I know that Republicans don't really honor that liberty mindset, and they've sort of sold out. And they only adopt that mindset whenever it's politically convenient, which is less and less frequently today. But that's why I vote for Republicans over Democrats, and as like a pragmatic decision, not because I agree with them, but because like, holy shit, like I can't stand the opposite's even worse. So that's sort of how I got in that. And then when I graduated from college, I worked for a couple of years for a company that owned over 70 Sprint stores, like Sprint Mobile. Mm-hmm. And I was responsible for marketing for those stores. And then I started taking clients on the side doing digital marketing. So I got to the point where I had enough clients, I could quit my job. And ever since 2016, I've owned a sort of a boutique advertising agency for small businesses. We do only social media advertising. And then I started this podcast in May. Yeah, One American Podcast in May I started. And it's
May of this year?
Yeah, May of this year, 2021. And it sort of blew up because Tony Schaefer said some badass shit about Bill Barr on it, and that video went viral.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Do you think that the people are getting worse too, not just the politicians? Because I know we like to blame, especially libertarians like to blame everything on the state. And I don't believe we are the government, but I believe that we allow the government to go as far as it does. I mean, I don't think the state would be as horrific as it is now if the people knew what was going on and they actually showed some resistance. And it seems like they don't. It seems like they're not interested in what's going on. And when they find out, they just get apathetic and just say, well, there's nothing I can do about it. Do you see that too, that people are just, they're just lame? You know, they just don't want to fix the problems.
Yeah, and I struggle trying to figure out what's at the bottom of this. But the best sort of response to that I can think of is it's not that people are getting worse, because I think people have always sucked and will continue to suck. And that's why it's important to have good systems so that even when people suck, that things work, you know, like McDonald's, for example. You can hire like the dumbest people on earth to work there and it still tastes the same at every location. And so
it's so just as bad everywhere.
exactly. But you know, you get my point. And so I think what's happened is, you know, 100 years ago in America, we had, you know, we weren't as well educated back then as a populace, but we had much more cultural consensus. Like there was much more agreement in the culture, like about things like the nuclear family and Judeo-Christian values, you know, and I'm not saying it's a problem that people branch away from Christianity or whatever. I don't care, but we had a lot of consensus. So there was less division in the nation, and you couldn't pull shit like you can today. I feel like the media just gets away with murder, literally, because there's not really like any concerted, there's not really any central understanding of what is crossing the line. So what pisses one group of people off that no one else cares about, and then what pisses this group of people off no one else cares about. So I just feel like it's disorganized and messy without consensus. I don't think that people are actually worse in any other sense than that.
Yeah, it's weird because in one way, you know, people all used to think more similarly. They were much more traditional, where there's a, you know, there's a more varied thought nowadays. But at the same time, it's a lot easier to brainwash everybody at once now than it was decades ago. I mean, they would still accomplish it, but it seems to me because there wasn't one source of media, you know, TV or internet or, you know, just like one centralized unit you could use to spread propaganda everywhere. It was a little bit harder back then.
Well, maybe that's the difference. Maybe back then the only difference was that everybody believed the same lies, and now everybody believes different lies.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems like they were better at unifying the whole country around bullshit. And nowadays they split the country around bullshit. Maybe that's not true. Maybe it's always been split, but it seems like during World War II or World War I, or, you know, major historical events, the country was kind of on the same page, and they would still, in my opinion, kind of throw the scent off from what was really going on. But now when they do that, it seems like they got to get us to hate each other. And it seems like that really started around Vietnam, maybe, you know, that was when the true split started happening. And then that's what they've always capitalized since then, you know, the split getting us to hate each other and distract from any other problems that are happening.
Yeah, I think there's some of that going on. And I also think that it's been exacerbated by the internet, though I love the internet. This isn't a criticism of the internet. But with all of the media outlets, major media and independent media alike, it's all based on clicks now, right? So when there were three channels on television in the 50s or whatever, you didn't have to compete for views because you were the only game in town. But now it's hyper competitive on the internet for click traffic, and they've figured out that the best way to get traffic is to really piss people off. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's sort of like the economic incentive that is exacerbating the problem, in that like just everything is designed to catalyze rage and clicks, and that just divides everybody, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it's as tradition goes away too, you know, instead of capitalizing on tradition to use it as propaganda, they just go for other things. So as we move away from the past into the future, we're not really gaining any sort of resistance to brainwashing at all. You know, they're just finding different ways to do it. They capitalize on stimulation or, mm-hmm. You know, ease of attaining things, you know, or lack of critical thinking. That's what they use instead. Where in the old days, you know, maybe they'd use your religion or use your patriotism or whatever it was to try to garner that excitement. And I don't know, it just seems that it's something humans are susceptible to no matter what they believe in or no matter what culture they have. So I think that focusing on a particular culture, particular religion, or particular political leaning isn't really the problem. I think people just need to really start critically thinking more and more now, because even more than in the past, things are complicated, and you know, they distort information so much. You know, we know so much more than we used to, as you were alluding to earlier, that it's easier to confuse us with just massive amounts of information that they throw at us, and they can just make us believe incorrect conclusions just like that, you know, because we're not even paying attention anymore because all the details are kind of going over our heads.
Yeah, I agree with you. And one of the things that has really been blowing my mind is that they're even trying to brand critical thinking itself as like white privilege or racist. Have you seen that some of the CRT arguments, the critical race theory people are like, like math, for example, is racist? It's like, come on. It's like,
yeah.
How can you simultaneously advocate for equity and then say math is racist? Like, how do you quantify what equity is if you don't use math, you fucking idiot? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? And so, yeah, I totally agree with you. Our society over the last 10,000 years or 8,000 years, whatever, since Homer, has progressed rapidly, and evolution is a slow process that takes millions of years. So we still have caveman brains, you know, and mm-hmm. we're susceptible to things like brainwashing. We hyper stereotype and hyper categorize because it's an efficient way to organize information, and it's conducive to surviving in the wild, right? But you know, we're dealing with a completely different environment that we've innovated and manufactured than what we are biologically and psychologically evolved to handle. So we just have to be aware of that and try to focus on compensating for that. And so I think you're absolutely right, man. I think the number one problem in the United States is that people aren't able to critically think. And honestly, it's not that fucking hard to teach somebody to critically think. Like, you can read the 25 fallacies, argument fallacies, or whatever. You could do like, you know, one course, especially if you're an adult, you'll remember it. And you start to see stuff. Like, I took a course in college called Critical Thinking Logic, and it was basically a math course, but we learned about all the argument fallacies. Like what a straw man is, what a red herring is, all that shit. And that course totally changed my life, because now I can see like, oh, that's an ad hominem attack. And just because that person is an asshole doesn't mean that they're wrong when they say 2 + 2 = 4, because it is fucking 4, you know? And so the critical thinking gap that we have in the United States is overwhelming.
Yeah. Do you think it's something that's sort of global? It's not really restricted to the United States. Do you think that critical thinking in general is going downhill? It seems to me that it probably is.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say because I'm not familiar enough with what's going on in other countries. I think you're probably right. I do think that the overwhelming feeling that we have that things are getting worse, just like worldwide objectively, maybe a little bit misguided, because like what's that book? Is it Pinker that wrote the book? Not The Rational Optimist. I can't remember the name of it. There's this guy that Pinker wrote this book, I believe, and it was basically all the stats about how everything's actually getting better. Like average household income, level of education reach, like murder rates went down. And this is before 2020, so discounting 2020, right? Murder rates were going down. So if you look at like all the numbers of like things that you would generally look at to see how a society is doing, like things are getting better worldwide, you know, like third world countries have never done better, right? So I wonder if it's actually getting worse, or if it just feels like it's getting so much worse because the media has an incentive to publish bad news constantly, you know, for the clicks, like we were talking about earlier. So I don't know what's going on in that front, but I do think that people are less capable of critical thinking now than they used to be. I think that we've lost some of that, at least domestically.
Yeah, it's a question of what getting better means. I mean, if life is easier, if you're living longer, if you're healthier, does that necessarily mean that things are getting better? Right. If there's more control, if nobody's thinking anymore, if everything is centralized, if you're basically just a robot performing, you know, menial tasks or whatever. I think about that a lot, not even just, you know, as far as the NSA spying us or the government trying to control us. I think about that with technology as it improves, you know, if we have driverless cars, if you no longer have to cook eventually, or if you don't have to eat as much, if they come up with some sort of pill that you can just eat that, you know, re-energizes you or whatever. I mean, the more that we progress, it seems like we're leaving behind whatever it is that makes us human or makes us natural. And I'm not sure that that's a good thing. It's something that's hard to argue against because it makes sense to go in that direction. And it always makes sense to go toward an easier, longer, more prosperous life. But if it doesn't have struggle, if it doesn't have variety, if it doesn't have frustration, you know, I don't know if it's as valuable. What do you think about that?
Man, I think that's really interesting. And you made me think of something that I hadn't thought of before while you said that. Remember like when we were kids, I don't know how old you are. I'm 30, but when I was a kid,
27. So.
You remember like on a summer day playing alone for like 4 hours, like in a sandbox.
Yeah.
I feel like part of the problem is that no one is ever alone anymore. And like, obviously people are isolated, but that's different than being alone. Like you can be isolated and still talking to thousands of people online. Right.
Right.
And I think there might be something to be said for like, I don't know, coming of age or even as an adult, having time where like there's no way for you to communicate or interact with anybody else. And it occurs to me because like, if you think about social media and the impact that it has on people, people are constantly thinking about whether or not what they are doing or saying will appeal to their following, even if you only have like 75 followers, right? And so that changes the way that you like think about yourself and your place in the world and the human condition if you're like 15, for example, especially. Like, I don't know that I would have been dinking around in a sandbox for like 4 hours and just kind of like staring at the sky if I was thinking about how many TikTok views I could get, you know, when I was a kid. So I think that maybe we've lost a little bit of touch with what it means to be a human being because we don't ever really get the chance to think independently of the rest of the community. I don't know. It's just speculation.
Yeah, no, it's
true. Spend a lot of time in a truck though, so you get that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't understand people who can space out. I don't even know what that means because I can't space out. I mean, if I'm spacing out, I'm thinking about something. I can't.
Yeah,
just go
nobody spaces out. That just means I'm not paying attention,
I guess. But some people, it does seem like they don't, you know, they don't think in their downtime. But even before I was a truck driver, when you have all that windshield time, when I was doing other jobs, I was always thinking about philosophy or politics or, you know, something. It's just the way I have trouble going to sleep at night. I'm not the type of guy that can fall asleep 5 minutes after I hit the pillow. It takes me a while because my brain is just spinning. And but I don't know. I've thought a lot about the, you know, countering the direction that humanity is going. So I'm the type of guy who, you know, I still own a 1994 Toyota pickup. It's the same year I was born. It's got over 300,000 miles on it. You know, it doesn't have air conditioning. It's a manual transmission, but I like that. I like being different than everyone else. I like kind of going against the direction of cars that are driving themselves, that are pressing the brake pedal for you, that are keeping you in your lane. I just don't like any of this stuff because it seems like we sort of reached a peak, you know, where you were in control and you could do a lot of things. And then we went over the peak of you being in control, but you can still do a lot of things. It's like, you're not in the driver's seat, like literally anymore with a lot of things, you know, they're kind of deciding how you're going to do things. It was reaching this point where you were directing your life, but you had all this great technology at your disposal, and it's starting to morph into where you are no longer the one choosing the direction anymore, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you on that. And I think that we have to be careful because, in my opinion, that's right, Better Angels. Way to go, Top Lobster.
Thanks, Top Lobster.
Must be a Jordan Peterson fan. So I was going to say, we have to be careful that we're not anti-progress, because there's a difference between that which is enabling and that which is crippling in terms of like tech and stuff, right? So like, mm-hmm. I don't want to be that curmudgeon that's like, man, things have changed so much since I was a kid. Like, you have to embrace change, I believe, and not fight against it, because it's like this inevitable force. But I think what you have to do is you have to manage the direction that the change is going. So like, rather than trying to stop the boat, you just have to do what you can to change the direction. So like, you know, I don't have a problem with you know, social media or Tesla or self-driving cars or tech from that point, but I do have a problem when, you know, there's like a big tech sort of government cronyist conglomeration going on, and I'm being censored from information. Like, I wouldn't mind if Google was Google if it was like illegal for it to lie to me, you know? So yeah. I think that what we're seeing here is not necessarily like the inconveniences of technological advancement so much as it is the inconveniences of too much consolidated power. I could be wrong though. I'm just, who am I, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like the less involved humanity has to be with being on the ground and turning the nuts and, you know, tending to the horses or whatever it is, they just become more disconnected with reality. They just become more virtual beings, especially with the rise of the internet. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you and I, we actually have audiences, but a lot of people who don't even have audiences, who have just like 100 friends, they care more about their social media presence than they do about paying their bills on time or what's actually going on in their own lives. Yeah. And it seems to be because they're more and more disconnected from how everything actually works and actually having a hand in it, because it's, everything has just been placed in front of them their whole lives. So they're already, you know, they're already encouraged to, I guess, look beyond real life into something else, which is social media or the internet. And I could be wrong about that, but I feel like people that I grew up with who went into blue collar jobs or, who, you know, did grow, who are like, I don't know, 25 or older now, who were, you know, so from like 1996, 1997 or earlier, before video games started getting popular. If they were born before 1996 or 1995 or 1997, somewhere in there, you know, so that when they were kids in the early 2000s, video games weren't getting as popular as they were for kids who were born later. So they were actually playing outside, doing kick the can and, you know, mm-hmm. fishing and being gone for several hours at a time. Yeah, like that's all gone now.
Yeah, man, I grew up in Bloomington, Illinois, so I know what the fuck kick the can is, but it was a dumb game then too.
It was, but it was fun. And I don't know, like, you were creative and you had to make something out of life, you know, it wasn't all on a screen for you. And now that it is all on a screen, like, that's the new god that everyone rushes to, and they don't care about anything in reality anymore.
Yeah. Are you familiar at all with Robert Greene? His most famous book is 48 Laws of Power.
No, I'm not.
Oh man. 48 Laws of Power. You never read that? You should. Do you like to read?
Yeah.
Well, you can do the audiobook.
I do audiobooks.
It's super. Yeah. Cause you're on the road. So it's, you got to read that like next, dude. That'll blow your mind. That'll blow your hair right back. So anyway, he wrote this book. It's a really famous book. A lot of people in prison read it. And he wrote another book that is much less well known. I think it might have been his first book, called Mastery. And all he did was look at different people who were like masters in their field throughout history. I think one of them might have been Da Vinci was one of them, I think, and then a couple of authors, Einstein was one of them, and he tried to like find similarities between them to like come up with like, what does it take to be a master, right? So like one of the things was, you know, all these people had a mentor that was really important in their lives, right? Like a one-on-one mentor. Mm-hmm. And one of the other things that he found was that when they were working on whatever their craft was, so writing, painting, sculpting, math, when they were like at their deepest working state of mind, they were always doing something with their hands. Like one of them liked to pet his cat while he wrote. I think Einstein had a stress ball that he squeezed when he was thinking about relativity and other problems. And there were different examples of just something with their hands. And then Robert Greene makes the case that evolutionarily speaking, human beings developed critical thinking while they were using their hands, like working on something, building a tool, using tools to build something else. Mm-hmm. And that critical thinking is deeply connected to our hands still. And so I think that maybe there's something to be said for that with like our phones and video games. Obviously you use your hands with video games, but in a very sort of subconscious way. Yeah. Not in a way that you actually have to think about what you're doing with dexterity. And so Maybe the fact that like people aren't actually like playing outside, playing kick the can, I don't know, sculpting or carving stuff or building a fire or trying to build like a treehouse like kids used to fucking do in the United States. Like that used to be the American dream, was to have a treehouse in the backyard. Like when the hell was the last time you had one? Probably illegal. So, yeah. You know, it's like detached domain, not allowed in this in this district. So I think maybe that's part of it. Maybe we need to like get kids to fucking take guitar lessons or piano lessons or something, so they're, I don't know, doing something in the moment that has nothing to do with everybody else in the world. It just contributes to vanity too, the whole social media thing. I don't know. I'm raising a daughter that was born in January, and I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do when she starts getting older and wanting to fiddle with that stuff.
Yeah. I wonder how much of it is just natural. As I was saying earlier, it seems that we're going to trend this way no matter what. But at the same time, it seems incredibly advantageous for the ruling class that we become more controllable, more docile, less... you know, less critical. So I wonder how much of that is planned versus just happening over the course of human evolution.
In terms of like the actual like control that's going on?
Not the control, just the lifestyle we're choosing. Mm. And the acceptance of, you know, the acceptance of availability and ease and lack of struggle and, you know, just wanting everything placed right in front of you. It seems like that's the natural progression anyway, but it also sets the stage for authoritarianism, because you will sacrifice your liberties or you'll sacrifice your freedom in order for things to be prepared for you instantly, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think that the cultural willingness to sacrifice our freedoms may have less to do with people wanting to be comfortable and more to do with what I was trying to talk about, or what I was kind of saying earlier about how we don't have cultural consensus anymore. Like, you know, it's been 250 years since the revolution.
Like almost. Yeah.
You know, and I was thinking about this. It's like, man, if I live to be 80, I'll have, or 100, I'll have been alive like one out of every 3 days the nation has existed. Yeah. You know, but I think that every generation that departs from when their family immigrated here or when the nation was founded becomes more and more forgetful of how important liberty is. Uh-huh. So I think that there's like an inverse correlation. It's like we're forgetting, basically. It's almost like if you have like a personal trauma in your life, like something bad happens to you, like, I don't know, a parent dies or there's a divorce when you're a kid or whatever, like you think of as traumatic, or a breakup is a good example. The further away in time you get from it, like the less of an impact it has on you. Right. And I think that people, like as a culture, we just don't remember what it's like when King George tars and feathers your neighbor. You know, yeah. And if you've seen that and the government's like, hey, we're going to go door to door and give you a vaccine. You're like, fuck, no, you're not. Like, I'll fucking die before you do that, you know? And, but yeah. Nobody's seen anything like that. Nobody's seen the terror that is tyranny, except for the Cubans that came over here. And that's why they're the ones throwing a fucking shit storm in Florida right now over all this shit going on domestically, too. I mean, anytime Nancy Pelosi goes to Miami, she gets like screamed at by a bunch of Cubans, you know? And it's because they remember, because it just happened to them. And so we're at that point right now where it isn't immediately obvious, unless you've like read Milton Friedman or something, that these policies are going to lead to terrible living conditions. And since we're not at that point where it's obvious without studying it, which nobody fucking does because they're distracted, people are just making trades. Like, sure, I'll stay in my house for a year. I'll stay at home for a fucking year. Are you kidding yeah. me? Or like last year, it's like, I never would have thought that they could stop you from going to a church. I mean, it's the First Amendment, like freedom yeah. of religion right. or right to assemble. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
yeah. And I know that it didn't stand up in the Supreme Court when they fought it or whatever, but still, like half yeah. that shit last year, like, I don't know. It's obvious to me that this is going in a bad direction. I think what people get wrong is the timeline, but the prognosis is correct. Like, if you look at Schiff, if you look at libertarians in general, they're like, hey, guys, this is bad. It's all going to blow yeah. up. And they're always wrong about when. Like, Schiff's been saying, like, next year for, like, 10 years. But it's yeah. not because he's lying or he's full of shit. It's just the timeline is so much harder than the what. Like, the when is right. so much harder than the what. And so, like, I totally agree that the policies that we're making, the way that business is going and how it's being conglomerated and sort of influenced by the deep state and the government, if that continues to happen over the course of however many amount of years, we're eventually going to get to tyranny. What I can't figure out is whether or not it's next year or next century.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I had mixed feelings about how people reacted. I was
still
surprised.
Here. I just got to reset my mic. Not my mic, but my cam. It overheats.
It's all good.
Go ahead, though. Go ahead. You were surprised?
I was surprised at how people reacted, but at the same time, I wasn't. I was surprised how long some of it lasted, I guess. You know, I was like, really, guys? Like, we're still doing this? You haven't had enough? But I wasn't surprised with the initial reaction of terror and retreat.
Everybody was spooked like right off the bat.
Yeah, and I'll admit I was too. I didn't know what was going on. I don't think anyone.
Yeah, I wasn't terrified, but I was definitely uneasy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you know, I think everyone kind of forgets where they were when it first started happening. Where I was in Arizona, and there weren't cops like locking people in their houses. Everyone voluntarily stayed home if they didn't have to do anything.
Yeah, in the beginning.
And so then when the lockdowns became policy, everyone was already doing that. So there wasn't any resistance. They were just like, yeah, okay, that's what we're going to do. So, you know, this kind of comes, this all comes to the idea of the Constitution or the Second Amendment or the First Amendment or any of these freedoms that are written down. They're only as powerful as the people who
exercise
care
them.
About them. Yeah. I mean, and they don't care about any of them. You know, I mean, so many yeah. people are talking about guns right now.
And I love your rampage, by the way, on that. You're right. It's like, yeah. where the fuck were you when they were telling you you couldn't go to church then?
Yeah.
You know, or where were you when they shut down your business? Like, right. not one business owner. I think there was a bar in New York, right, that refused to close and they got fined like 8 million times. And there was a gym there, too, in New York City. But other than that, like, I didn't hear of anybody just staying. Like, if everybody would have agreed to just stay open, they wouldn't have been able to leverage that. But the fact that they're fining businesses and taking away licenses, and like in Texas, that lady lost her license to own a barbershop or whatever. And I think she got pardoned or whatever by the governor and got it back. But like, the fact that she had to get pardoned is just, oh, it just pisses me off so badly.
Yeah. I mean, if guns are the red line, like if they come for your guns, however you're picturing that happening, if that's your red line, that's pretty pathetic. Like if they could take everything else from you, but you have your gun, what good is your gun? If you're going to take your, you know, if they're going to take your livelihood, they're going to take your freedom. They're going to take your ability to get food on the table. Why own a gun? What's the point? Like just to sleep with it or something? I mean, if they say, okay, onto the boxcar, you can take your AK-47 with you if you want. I mean, what good is the gun? So many people are obsessed with gun ownership, and I don't see what gun ownership does to deter anything, because I think the government is pretty confident that we're not going to do anything with our guns. I mean, if they could get away with everything they just did when we supposedly have almost half a billion guns in the country, I don't think they're scared of us making any sort of ruckus about anything else they're going to do. And yeah, I think the only way I could be wrong is that they're so dumb that they actually do decide to go really far on gun legislation and they actually stir up a hornet's nest and enough people do get angry about it. But I don't know. I just don't see them doing that. I see them keeping the heat on and keeping the rhetoric on about it to keep everyone fighting about it because that's a big moneymaker. But I don't think they'll actually do anything. Could be wrong.
Well, I think what they're going to do is they're going to do a gun buyback program where the federal government will buy back, starting with assault rifles, which I know is not necessarily the correct nomenclature, but starting with like AR-15s, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they'll pay like an AR-15 you can get an AR-15 for like $1,500, right?
Yeah.
The federal government might say, hey, we'll buy one for $3,000, right? And then all the prices will go up to a point where it's like just unaffordable to get one, right? And if that doesn't work, they'll just inch it up to the point where it's like, if you want to buy a gun retail, you're gonna have to spend $10,000 on it because the government buys them all at $10,000, you know? And I think they'll do things like that where they don't have to make it illegal to say, hey, we'll buy every gun and give it to the military or whatever. And it's sort of like what Australia did. I know Australia, I think it was like a mandatory gun selling buyback thing.
Yeah.
But I think we might have a version of it that is seemingly less atrocious because they don't force you to, you don't have to sell it to us, but the practical result of it is that just no one's buying one. But I agree with you, man. Like, the way that tyranny happens is it's like a thief in the night, like Jesus said in the Bible. And regardless of whether you're a Christian or not, there's still a lot of wisdom in that fucking book. So
yeah.
He said that the end comes like a thief in the night, right? Like you don't see it coming and then it's there. That's the way tyranny is. It's gradual. And so like, yeah, I think that if the National Guard came and started arresting, you know, door-to-door Republicans or gun owners like tomorrow, that there would be a lot of violence in the street.
Yeah.
But, you know, if tyranny encroaches like a frog in a pot of hot water, like over a long period of time, like you just wake up one day and you're like, wow, nobody has a gun anymore. It's like, yeah, because they've been selling it. The government's been buying them back for such a high price for so, you know, you're like, oh shit, we don't have guns anymore. You know? Yeah. And so I don't know.
I think that's completely viable. I mean, that's the type of thing they would do. And they'll also make it so that they can raid your house for pretty much anything if they want to. So if they actually have a, you know, if they have some sort of lead that you're going to lead some sort of insurrection against your state house or
they'll
something.
Call you a domestic terrorist and get a secret, whatever the fuck it's called, warrant to raid your house.
Yeah, red flag warrant. Yeah, so I mean, they're going to expand police power to take your guns for whatever reason they deem necessary. Like you said, they'll make it more expensive. And then I think the other battle is the cultural battle, and that's definitely being lost. Gun ownership is going down. I mean, there are some younger people.
We had a good year, though.
Yeah, we did have a good year. That's true. We sold a lot of guns, but they're mostly going. I mean, last year, there were a lot of new buyers. But most of the guns are owned by a very small minority of the country.
I own 3.
Yeah, I own 16. So
nice. You know, did you inherit some of them?
What's that?
Did you inherit some of them?
No, my parents actually weren't gun people, so I had
my
to
parents weren't either.
All of them myself. Gun ownership seems to be becoming less and less popular. And more fringe, like, oh, why would you own a gun? You don't need to hunt with that anymore. And then if you say, well, it's not for hunting, then you're really weird. So I think that's the way that they, you know, they remove it through consensus of the citizens. Like they'll start ostracizing you if you're a gun guy. Like they'll, and you know, that's more effective than legislation, I think, you know, the way that society views gun ownership.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's hard for me to tell if it's sort of like a concerted effort to manipulate the message or the narrative on that, or if it's just sort of happening naturally as a byproduct of social media. I think it mostly has to do with the urbanization and urbanization of America and the fact that like everybody goes to college now in a way that they didn't before. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know, like even if you grew up in a rural community like I did in Bloomington, Illinois, where, you know, a lot of people had long guns, especially in their basements. Like I went to college in a major city, and like I couldn't carry a gun into my dorm. So like even if I had been, and then after I graduated, I stayed in the city. So I think there are a lot of people like me that they go to a city for school, then they stay in the city, and then because the city has such major gun restrictions, they just never get one, right? Then maybe they would have if they grew up in like a more rural area. And I was sort of different in that. I made an effort to get one because I am a Second Amendment guy, and I thought I should exercise the right. But I just think it has to do with the urbanization of society as a whole. As the population grows, there are more and more cities, and then the cities that do exist get more and more populated. Therefore, you're going to have less gun ownership because people tend to rely on the community more than self-reliance when they live in an urban area. Whereas if you live in a rural area, you're more inclined to think of how you can fend for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to shift the conversation a little bit. You were talking earlier about how you, you vote Republican, but you hate the Republicans. So you're weird because you actually like us libertarians. I think if I were looking in at us right now, I would just be like, wow. I mean, we find the dumbest stuff to argue about. Right now it's religion. 2 days ago it was age of consent. Before that, I forget. I don't know. It's hard to keep up. Like every 3 days it changes.
Age of consent.
Everyone hates each other, and it just goes on and on and on. Like, we can't seem to say, hey, you know, maybe age of consent isn't the most important argument right now. Maybe we should be talking about other things.
She looks like she needs a couple more summers.
You gotta be careful, because that they might think that's me if they catch a clip of that. but what do you think of us? You actually like us. Why is that? What is
I like about? Libertarians, because the only reason I'm a fucking Republican is because I believe in liberty, and it's closer to liberty than Democrat than leftists. And the only reason I vote for Republicans over libertarians is because Republicans can actually get elected. As soon as libertarians have a candidate I think can win, I'll support them. But I'm not going to waste a vote. If I live in a swing state, I'm not going to waste a vote on a libertarian candidate, you know? And I understand why people do vote their conscience. So I'm not bashing people that are like, fuck you, I'm voting for Joe Jorgensen because Trump sucks and Hillary sucks. Or not Hillary, but Trump sucks and Biden sucks. Like, I understand. Yeah. I respect you for that. But that's not how I'm going to play this game. Like, in Texas, when there's a gubernatorial race and the Democrats fund Beto O'Rourke out the ass and it's close, I'm not going to vote for the Libertarian governor. I'm sorry. I'm going to vote for whoever the Republican governor is going to be, just because I don't want my fucking taxes to go up, okay? Yeah. And I know it might be selfish and Machiavellian or whatever, and I get it. But, you know, don't criticize me for how I vote. Figure out how to make your party more popular. And I'll support Libertarians with money. Like, if a Libertarian is running, and I, you know, or if the party did a good fundraiser, for example, I would give them money. You know, I might not vote for him, but I would definitely, like, there are a lot of Republicans that would send cash on a regular basis to the Libertarians if they had an organized marketing message and a way to make that easy. You know, I don't think that Republicans are traditionally against libertarian. I mean, maybe some of like the Reagan, like drug war Republicans are like, you Libertarians are all about everybody doing heroin. Like maybe people that get distracted with that. But I think that on like the general Republican community understands that more liberty is better than less liberty. And right now we don't have enough liberty. Therefore, supporting the Libertarians is conducive to the outcome that we want. It seems to me to be common sense. Like, I'm not a Libertarian in the sense, like, some of you guys are like borderline anarchists, and
there's
I
no
like
borderline
you guys
to it with some of us. Some of us are
right. And I'm not, like, I believe that the state has a role in protecting individual rights and protecting people from each other. But, you know, reasonable people can disagree. But I don't identify as a libertarian because I think government should be bigger than that, though smaller than it is. But I'm totally happy with supporting libertarians because you guys want a smaller government, and so do I. Right. So let's just work together. And then if we get to the point where we've like totally conquered the leftists, and then we can argue about whether or not we want a small government versus no government. But right now, let's just try to get it small. Let's shrink the deal, man.
Yeah, it's sort of like, arguing over anarchy versus minarchy is like two college students who have just graduated who are tens of thousands of dollars in debt, and they're arguing with each other over what they're going to do once they become millionaires. It's like, well, why don't you become a millionaire first and then argue about what you're going to do after you have $1 million? You know, you've got a lot of work in front of you to get there. And we're not very good at that. Like, we'd rather retreat into our basements and have our little round tables about, you know, what we're going to do in Ancapistan and how we're going to figure out how to, you know, have private courts or whatever. And it's like, okay, I mean, they're, you know, there's a genocide going on in Yemen. We're almost $30 trillion in debt. There's millions of people locked up for, you know, nonviolent
crime. Fuck Yemen, America first. Like,
you know, like those things are probably a little more important than your hypothetical anarchist utopia. That's, I don't know. I do consider myself an anarchist, but I don't think anarchy is inevitable. I think collapse.
Well, that's how everything started. Was anarchy, right. And it seems like it doesn't exist anywhere in the world now. So it seems to me that the ultimate way that anarchy plays out is a state.
Yeah, I mean, I think people like to rule over others, or they like to be told what to do. And then libertarians, which are neither of those, are a very small sliver, you know, of the public. I think they're by far a minority. So this idea that, I do think that government is inevitably going to get bigger and then collapse, but it doesn't mean it goes away. It always seems to be followed by something more tyrannical and worse. There's been very few instances where people overthrew their government and then had something better afterward. I mean, we're an example of that.
We didn't overthrow a government though. We just kicked one out.
That's true. We just kicked it out. But, you know, it's very rare that you have a giant authoritarian state that crumbles and then there's a utopia afterward. And a lot of anarchists act like that's going to be the case with the United States, that because this is so unsustainable, it's going to fall apart and we're all just going to separate and balkanize and live happily ever after. And I just don't think that's true. I don't think that the people will go for it. I think they'll choose autocracy over anarchy because they'll be scared of anarchy, you know?
I think you got to remember, too, that the population in the United States, which at the time was the colonies, the population in the colonies on the 4th of July was like 2 million, right? Mm-hmm. So now the population, is 350 million. So I think that in the event of a total collapse of the United States, we're probably not looking at a single nation replacing it. So I could be wrong, but it seems to me that very likely that many of the existing states within the United States in that event would become their own nations. Some of them would consolidate toward, you know, maybe the Dakotas would just become the nation of Dakota or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it's possible in that event that some of those countries would be better than others. But I agree with you. It's not going to be like an opportunity for us to start with a blank canvas. It's more like giving a painter a canvas that has like paint spilled on it and being like, you know, fucking paint the Mona Lisa. It's like,
well, see, that
kind of ruined the canvas.
That scenario I'd be down with if we actually were separating and balkanizing it. And, you know, maybe California would end up worse than what the United States is now, but you have these other areas that turn out a lot better. I would take that gamble. I actually think that might not be the case. There might be someone like some horrible dictator, you know, who rises to power because people are so scared at the shakedown and economic collapse and, you know, the system just falling apart that they will turn to someone who is saying crazy shit and will actually.
Yeah.
Be really well, bad. I mean, that's
in the event of a straight up dictatorship, though, that's when the Second Amendment does actually apply, assuming that we still have one. So, in my opinion, right. If the dollar collapse,
other thing is like you can get the Second Amendment people on your side as a dictator. That wouldn't be impossible. I mean, if you stir up the right message that motivates the right people, that's not, you know, not centered on liberty, you can use some sort of other red herring to get them, you know, get them to hate a certain demographic or a certain enemy. I mean, that's how a lot of dictators have risen up because things get bad and then it's easy to find a scapegoat that's actually not responsible for why your life sucks so much. So in that case, the Second Amendment doesn't really help because then you could have, you know,
right.
The brown shirts basically.
Well, and that's one of the things that bothers me about, gun ownership in the United States is that it seems to be overwhelmingly one side of the political spectrum. right?
And the side that likes the enforcement arm of the state, which is kind of...
Yeah, and I tweet this a lot. Like, I wish every... I've tweeted, I wish every adult in the United States who could legally have a gun had one. Mm-hmm. You know, and I as a joke, I tweet a lot, like, you know, the Democrats are trying to make it harder for minorities to defend themselves. Like, you just like frame it in like a minority language, like the NRA never does.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's true. It's like, Jesus Christ, like, you don't want, they don't want black people to have guns. Like, that sounds pretty racist to me, but it's, they don't want black people, they don't want anybody to have guns. So I would like to see an entire population armed, because in the event of a dictator that had, you know, 50% of a nation's support, like, they still wouldn't be able to get away with like breaking into people's houses at night and arrest them. But I'm optimistic that if we get to the point where like your neighbor's getting arrested, that people would start being real pissy. But I don't know. I mean,
yeah, I mean, they were,
what happened though, in Nazi Germany,
they were turning their neighbors in last year for, you know, going out during lockdowns. I mean, it's just the amount of hatred I saw between people that I love last year just drove me insane. It drove me up a wall. Mm-hmm, I mean, and it was over something so menial in comparison to something like Nazi Germany. I mean, it's like, okay, this is all it took for you to be a narc and rat out your neighbor to the authorities. This is all it took, you know? Like, okay, if we were in some serious shit, I know what you would do. I know which side you'd be on. And that, I don't know, that was an eye opener. And I mean, I've always thought people suck, but I sort of bought into the argument that most people are libertarian. They just don't know it yet. But the last year and a half or so has just completely disproven that they're not. I mean, most people, I said it earlier in the stream, they're, you know, they want to control others or be controlled. And, it's terrifying.
Well,
so.
I think the difference between libertarians and everyone else is that libertarians understand that if their neighbor doesn't have rights, they don't either. But everyone else is just trying to take away the rights of their opponents, and they don't realize it's like, the, you know, a snake with a tail in its mouth. So, like, we've seen this, like, one of the things that I like DeSantis, but one of the things that really pissed me off about him is he bans critical race theory, which I fucking hate critical race theory. I don't even know if I support public education or not, though. But the he bans it in schools, and then immediately after that, it says, and they are mandated to teach the evils of communism. I'm like, I'm no communist. I fucking hate communism, but I don't want the state telling me which political structures are superior or inferior. Like, I'll tell my kid that, but like, you're gonna, what if DeSantis wasn't governor and some Dem governor came in and like wanted to enforce, like, you know, a class on advantages and disadvantages of socialism over capitalism? Like, what the hell? Like, we can't do that. So they're just like trying to out cancel each other, the left and the right, right now. And I think the libertarians are one of the things that they're right about is they just want everybody's rights to be respected, even the opposition.
Yeah, it's the problem is control. The problem is the Department of Education. I mean, that really is the problem. If you don't have a federal Department of Education, then you can have locally funded departments or preferably private school, Catholic school, wherever you want to go. And then you can, you know, you can choose which propaganda you want your kids to be brought up with, basically, instead of having the state enforce it. But yeah, we're coming up on an hour here. I'm going to be on your show tomorrow night. So everyone had better go subscribe to Chase's channel. I've got the link in the description. Go follow him on Twitter.
Thanks, man.
But if you got any other plugs or anything else you want to say, just say it now and then we'll end the stream.
That's it.
That's it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, man. This was a good time. I can hang out with you forever.
All right, man. Looking forward to tomorrow night. And then for everyone watching, I will be streaming on Thursday night, I think at 9:00 Eastern with Jeremy Kaufman. So check in for that. Cool.